Talk Radio, a forum for new thoughts and fresh ideas, a place to learn and an opportunity to express yourself. Get involved with our newsmakers and our newsbreakers of today and tomorrow. Talk Radio invites your participation. Talk Radio is
Bill Jenkins.
Welcome to a Saturday night. I am Bill Jenkins, and it's time for Open Mind, a Saturday night institution. I'm glad to have you aboard. It's one of those nights that we like to stretch that reality box of yours just a little bit. Reality box, in case you haven't been with us before, is something we all have. It's the window through which we view reality, but we find that that reality box of ours is shaped by a number of things. Our living experiences, our education, formal and informal, our religion, a lot of things. And if we get information that's outside of that reality box, we immediately decide that whoever's telling us that is demented or trying to lie to us or is crazy, you know, needs to be locked up, even if it's the perception of our own senses. And what we're about is to provide you with new information that most likely will fall outside of your reality box. But believe me, we're not ready to get locked up, and what we're telling you is basically true. If I were to tell you that there are flying saucers and alien beings in Earth space for a long time, some of you may agree with me. And some of you may say, oh, no, that's not so. Most people will say that's not so because the government has not told us so. And if it was so, our government would have told us all about it. This is the feeling that most people have. Somehow or another, it becomes the truth if the government says it so. Well, it just so happens that the government has lied to us about the aspect of the flying saucer, and they've been doing it for many, many years, and we're going to prove that to you, I think, tonight, or at least give you something to really think about. And to help you think, there's a gentleman who's written a book that I hope that you get as soon as you can. If you can find it, it seems to be hard to get all at once. The book is called Clear Intent. The author is Larry Fawcett, and Larry is on the phone with us, speaking from the East Coast. Larry, welcome to Open Mind. Have we got you punched in? Hello there, Larry.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
Fine and dandy. Are there flying saucers, Larry?
Well, I believe they're real.
You believe they're real?
And so does the government.
Oh, the government. Why do they keep saying it's not so?
Well, this started in the early years of UFO sightings, where many people in the early 50s and late 40s began reporting UFOs, if you will, or flying saucers or flying discs.
Mm-hmm.
When the government realized that they had a potential here, a very big potential, in a sense that here was a phenomena that was outdistancing our latest aircraft and technology at that time, and they couldn't understand why our latest aircraft couldn't catch these things, if you will.
And
they began thinking on the lines of weapons delivery systems, and that's where the cloak of secrecy began dropping around the UFO phenomena.
Well, we read last week on the air a note by none other than George C. Marshall, who was at that time, I believe, a four-star general. I believe he was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in which he talked openly and candidly about these craft. They didn't know whether they were reconnaissance craft or what, but he felt that they were preparing to make a contact. We also had a note from another four-star general, Douglas MacArthur, in which he said our next battle will be fought against them in space. Now, these were back in the late 40s and early 50s that these things were said. So there was a time that the government was being honest and candid with us about the fact that there were alien beings.
That's correct. Even at one time, they had prepared a document which was called the Estimate of the Situation, which was prepared by the Air Force, which actually at that time, the document stated that UFOs were real. They were from extraterrestrial origin. Now, this document went all the way up to then Vannevar Bush, who battled it down, if you will, and said and didn't accept that document as something that should be put out to the public. And it was from that point on that the secrecy began and is still going on as of today.
Was there a feeling at a time that the American people just were not ready to accept the fact that there was a civilization that was more advanced than ours and that we would run amok in the streets and tear down our society and our economy?
Well, that was some of the beliefs. They believed that if indeed that the American public was told that UFOs were real, that certain things would occur. One, that money markets would fall. religion as we know it would fall, and other chaos would occur. People would be just panicking, similar to the 1939 Orson Welles radio program of War of the Worlds, if you remember back then. But we feel that we've come a long way since then. The softening up effect has occurred with the release of the movies Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T., if you will. People seem to be now accepting the UFO and the extraterrestrial hypothesis more and more.
Well, I've seen a number of surveys where more than half of the people in the United States do believe in them, that they do exist. Others are not sure, but if they would tend to believe that they're out there, very few people just back categorically say that they don't exist, that Earth is the center of God's creation.
Yes, that has been said, and many reputable scientists will tell you that we are the only ones within our galaxy anyway that can harbor life. It has to be ambiguous of us to think that we are the only ones within this great universe of ours. We are just now entering ourselves into voyages out into the beyond, if you will, and we are learning things every day from our space program, which points to that there is possibility of life on other planets.
Well, we see some strange things on the other planets. I think, for instance, the pyramids and the face on Mars.
That's correct.
Are quite fascinating. Here is a perfect face, about a mile and a half long. Two eyes, nose, tears coming down one side, the computer enhancement shows. And all of the rest of the terrain there, it's sort of a flat plain, but it's on the edge of a rugged area. And to look upon that and say that's a natural formation would be like looking upon Mount Rushmore and saying that that's the natural work of wind and water erosion.
I agree with you, Bill. Yes, and like I said, the shots are opening up many marvels to us. When we went past Saturn and seen all them things which we thought was dust at one time, we are now learning that all our thinking is absolutely wrong. There's something else out there. And we are finding that 20 or 30 years ago, scientists had wrote to the president and said, we'd never put a man on the moon. And as you know, we've been on the moon. And we are going out to other places right now.
They're even talking about going back there again.
That's correct.
Why did they stop going in the first place?
I couldn't tell you.
It certainly wasn't money.
No, it certainly wasn't.
That's another story, isn't it, Larry?
Yes, it is, Bill.
About the destructive end of the Apollo program. Cost us more to wind it down than it was to keep it going. Well, we have a lot of things and a lot of ground to cover tonight. Larry Fawcett is my guest. He's written a brilliant book called Clear Intent. Clear Intent deals primarily with information out of the government that was obtained from the Freedom of Information Act. You know, for the government to say that there is no such thing as flying saucers and then give you a document about it that's been all X'd out that you can't read anything of it, what is the secret if it's not there in the first place?
Well, that's what we say. If there are no UFOs, why all the secrecy? Why doesn't the government just open up all its files, everything it has on UFOs, to the public, and they won't do that?
Well, you want to touch on some of the things that those files are telling us in just a moment?
Sure, I'll be glad to.
Okay. You know, holidays are time in Los Angeles. I'm KABC. It's Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins, and delighted to have with me Larry Fawcett. Larry has authored a book called Clear Intent. He's been involved in the investigation of the UFO phenomenon for a couple of decades now. Was recently involved in the Brewster sightings. You want to tell us just a little bit about what was going on in Brewster, New York, over the summertime, Larry?
Sure, Bill. Well, there's been always a fallacy that UFOs are not seen over populated areas, and this is a very good case to counter that comment. During the months of June, July, and August, down in Westchester County in lower New York and the lower part of Connecticut, thousands upon thousands of people were reporting seeing a flying triangle, if you will, almost nightly, very low level. The object was very big in size, some estimations even as the size of 3 football fields. These would come in the twilight hours and sometimes even in broad daylight. Would come down over the Westchester County Highway. Cars would stop along the highway to watch this thing go over very silently. There were many photographs taken of the objects, including some very good video VHS films, if you will, on the object. In some incidences, the objects were reported over the nuclear facility station at Indian Point just outside of Peekskill, New York. Caused quite a stir there, in fact. The object stopped and hovered over Reactor 3 in that area. The security guards, which are part of the New York police down there, were so panicked that they issued out shotguns to all their personnel. In fact, they were afraid that there was going to be a penetration down into the nuclear area there.
Yeah, if you don't understand it, shoot it.
That was the philosophy that they were taking at the time. Also, things began happening with the reactor while the object was over the atomic plant itself. Things began going haywire inside. We are just now in the process of filing FOIA requests on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in Washington on the incident and with the Indian Point Nuclear Power Station. The information on that case came from the security guards themselves who were witnesses to this event. They even scrambled a helicopter from Fort Smith, New York, to come down and assist them in identifying what this intruder was.
I understand that people were lined up along the freeway there. Well, you don't call it a freeway. Was it a turnpike? Or
Westchester County Parkway.
Parkway, yes. Thousands of people were seeing it. We're in an area where sort of a sousier area of town there. IBM executives live out there. They were seeing it. We're not talking about little old farmers in the backwoods of nowhere.
No, we had engineers. We had computer operators. We had police officers. We had lawyers. Everybody from every walk of life. Engineers, airplane pilots, even military personnel.
Now, it's curious to me, Larry, why this story was not played up much in the media. I think there was one story that we did here, working on just some of the information that you gave me and that J. Allen Hynek gave me, talking to the chief of police there in the village of Brewster. He said, well, he thought it was those guys flying at night in tight formation with their little airplanes.
Yeah, ultralights.
Their little ultralights.
The only problem was that the nights that these things were seen, winds were about 40 knots.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know anything about flying, at 40 knots, even a Cessna would have a hard time flying in formation at that wind velocity.
Chances are they'd stall out.
That's correct. And ultralights are very light aircraft. People were reporting gigantic lights on these things.
Mm-hmm.
From my understanding of ultralights, they can't carry too much weight on them, number one. Second of all, they do make sound. You do hear engine noises, and people were reporting a silent object, no noise whatsoever. There were a flight of Cessnas in one of the sightings that tried to create sightings, if you will, but these were found out right away.
Some of the boys having fun with the phenomena that was going on.
That's correct. And it's funny that you should mention that no news coverage reached the coast out there, because down here, all the papers had front page stories, including the New York Times, the Daily News, all the major papers and television stations down here carried it.
Well, I asked the desk in New York if they could give us a story on it. They said, oh, yeah, they know it's going on, but, you know, there was something happening in the Middle East, and that was what was on today's agenda, and they just didn't want to mess with it. But you would have thought that the television networks would have certainly had this out all over the country.
Well, I know I attended a seminar down in Brewster. We gathered close to 900 witnesses at this seminar to come and tell the public what they were seeing at that time, and that was covered by basically every major network and newspaper down in the New York area.
And it ended up on the cutting room floor for the most
probably
part.
Probably.
Isn't that kind of an amazing thing?
Well, that's the problem with UFOs, and it's that aura around it was created in the early years. Once the government, in their studies, say, such as Project Blue Book, and which ended in 1969, once the government, who is the authority, by the way, said that UFOs weren't real, then the stories became not front page news anymore, but just little tiny articles, maybe 9 or 10 pages back. Or, in some incidences, the press just wouldn't touch it at all.
Or they would use it as a kicker at the end of their newscast.
And that's correct.
Something to chuckle about. But it really isn't something to chuckle about at all.
No, it's a very serious problem.
And we don't know whether the problem, serious it probably is, but whether it is good serious or bad serious, do we?
Well, we contend through our investigation into the government's files that there is some cause for concern. And that is in the information that we found out, and not freely. We had to go to court to pry some of these documents from the military. First being told, say, by the Central Intelligence Agency when we began to probe them for documentation, with them telling us they had no UFO information. They were out of the UFO gathering information since 1952 with the closing of the Robinson panel, which they had some involvement in. We later found out from an agency telling us that they had no documents, and taking them to court, we surfaced over 1,500 documents out of them. Inadvertently, they released 10 National Security Agency documents, so we said, wow. We were always under the opinion, the public was, that Blue Book, Project Blue Book, was the only investigatory body within the government gathering UFO reports and studying them. Now we had an intelligence agency involved, not only one, but two. When we began probing with FOIA under with the National Security Agency, they flatly denied, again, just like CIA did, that they had no documentation. They were never involved in the UFO phenomenon whatsoever. Well, to make a long story short, we wound up in the Supreme Court of the United States in August of 1980, where we got the agency to admit that they did indeed have vast files on UFOs, and that they were withholding these files from the public with the court's sanctions due to national security implications. Now, from the government saying, after all their studies, like Project Blue Book, that UFOs posed no threat to the security of the United States, and now, with us in court, they're telling us that UFOs do pose a threat to the security of the United States.
Well, what happened to the term that there is no such thing as a UFO if it doesn't pose or does pose a threat to the security of the United States?
Well, that's what we tried to bring up in court, but the courts went along with the government in saying that a release of the information would jeopardize the agency's means of gathering intelligence and so forth, and that there were some indications of national security. We found that any time the military wanted to, or the security agencies, or the intelligence agencies, did not want public access into files, they would attach national security implications on them.
But how could this be, Larry, if the UFO does not exist?
Well, that's what we kept saying. How could you keep saying this if you're saying that UFOs do not exist? Now, we found, after hitting all the intelligence agencies, and we learned of intelligence agencies that we never thought existed, there was something like we turned up 50 intelligence gathering organizations within the American government which had involvement into the UFO phenomena. Some that we never even heard of. One was so classified that we couldn't even get what the letters stand for for the intelligence agency, if you will. To make a long story short, we gathered over something like 5,000 pages of documents that were released to us, which painted a very large picture that the government was indeed still actively investigating the UFOs, contrary to what they were telling the public, and that in some incidences there were national security implications, and them implications involved the overflights of the Strategic Air Command bases during 1975, which the public was unaware of.
So there's a lot going on in this field.
That's correct.
And a lot of that has found its way into the pages of your book, Clear Intent.
Yes.
Published by Prentice Hall. I've had a number of my listeners tell me that they can't get the book out here, Larry.
Well, it's very hard to get the book, and we're having a lot of problems with it. It was released on the East Coast, and by the way, it's into its fifth printing already. It seems that every bookstore that gets it in can't keep it on its shelves. It just goes out very quickly. I do know that the California and L.A. is just beginning to get the books into some of the stores now out there, but everybody that is writing to us are telling us that they can't get the book at all.
But if they ask for it, they can get it for you at any good bookstore.
Yes, they can get it for you, or later on in the program, I'll give them an address where they can get the book.
Okay, we'll certainly do that in just a moment. I'm speaking to Larry Fawcett, the author of Clear Intent, which is a very clear and concise look at what the government is not telling you, from the pages of the government's own documentation. As you can see, we're going around in circles, just a little bit of that. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, 3 hours on Saturday, December 1st, and I want you to be with us for that one. And some of these topics of discussion will be the expansion of consciousness, his tape program, the Gateway Weekend Workshop, also the out-of-body experience. Now, Bob Monroe's developed a series of tapes utilizing hemisync, short for hemispheric synchronization. Now, these tapes and this technique offer much promise and potential, aiding the individual to use more and more of his brain power. These tapes are available for sale and for home use. The hemisync tapes form the basis of the Gateway Weekend Workshops. Participants of the workshop experience tape exercises and share in group discussions, all aiding them to develop, explore, and apply expanded states of consciousness. The next three-day Gateway Workshop is December 7th, 8th, and 9th. You should go if you can. For more information on the tapes and certainly that workshop, why don't you call this number, area code 213-393-9405. Let me give it to you again. They're ready to talk to you right now, by the way. Area code 213-393-9405. And that one is a must-do, if you will.
Look, you have a beautiful
talk tonight. Larry Fawcett is my guest. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. And if you would like to talk to Larry and find out what the government is not telling us about the UFO phenomenon, I don't know of anyone who knows more. As you've already found out, he's been to court, all the way to the Supreme Court, in order to get the information, which is the public's information, and get it out to you. Let me give you the telephone numbers if you'd like to talk to Larry. Charles, welcome aboard.
Hi, how you doing, Bill? I'd like to ask your guest, where do UFOs come from? I mean, is there a is there one specific planet or one specific origin in outer space?
To the caller, I really can't answer that due to the fact that none of the government documentation say any of that. We have information when we were putting the book together. Of course, a lot of the information came from military and intelligence informants, if you will. Our information has it that there are close to 30 civilizations visiting this planet.
Oh, I see. And I guess there's no way of sort of understanding where, you know, if there's more than one civilization or several civilizations.
About 30 is what he said, Charles.
I beg your pardon?
About 30 different civilizations.
Oh, about 30 civilizations. Great, so I guess there's no way of knowing exactly which one is visiting us or if there are more than one.
No, I really can't say. And there again, I must strongly emphasize that government documentations that we have in our possessions make no direct quotes as to where UFOs are coming from.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you.
It's always be interesting to find out. Maybe we can talk to them one day and they'll tell us.
Oh,
when
great.
When they feel like talking to the squirrels, which is about what it would be like.
It's interesting that you make that statement, Bill, because we do have information in our possession that there is an ongoing contact with extraterrestrial civilizations with our military. And this contact has been going on since 1970.
I think I know the one. And they've got their hands full with that one right now. All right, Charles, thank you.
Thank you.
And we have Steve on the line. Steve, welcome aboard.
Thank you. I wanted to ask your guest if, let's do it this way. Does he have any information about a sighting that occurred approximately 9 years ago over the flight deck of the USS Enterprise?
Yes, I heard about that.
Did you also hear about the pyramid that supposedly was dropped from the bottom side of this UFO?
No, I didn't.
I heard about that. Did the pyramid come all the way down to the flight deck of the Enterprise?
No, it didn't, but it hovered underneath the underside of the UFO for approximately, I think it was 10 or 15 minutes.
Were you there, Steve?
No, a very good friend of mine was there. Mm-hmm. My connection with this is that I've had many out-of-body experiences from underneath pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
And last week's guest alluded to the feeling that they had to have some sort of a energy field. And the interesting thing about out-of-body experiences from underneath a pyramid is that you cannot get back into your body without going under the pyramid. If you try to re-enter from above the pyramid, there's an energy field that throws you off to the side. And that connected with what your guest last week talked about and what a very, well, lifelong friend of mine described to me. He was on the flight deck of the Enterprise at the time of the sighting. And I was just curious if your guest tonight had any information along those lines as far as that sighting goes.
Do you have any more information on it, Larry?
Yeah, we tried to get information on the sighting on the Enterprise by filing Freedom of Information Act requests with the Navy, but they claim that the incident never occurred.
Oh, so they're just flat denying it.
That's right.
So the guys on board were hallucinating.
That's correct.
For several minutes. I mean, we aren't talking 2 minutes. We're talking, he said, 10 to 15 minutes.
Yes, it was a quite long sighting. We've had other people that were aboard the Enterprise tell us about that incident.
Mm-hmm. Geez, I had another question, but that's all right. I can't seem to remember it right now.
It skipped you for the moment.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be here till midnight, so flip back in if you have things to your mind. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for bringing the Enterprise sighting to our attention.
This was the other question.
You thought of it. Go ahead.
Yeah. Does your guest have any ideas to why they are the government's trying to withhold this? It would seem to me that one of the logical explanations for this withholding of information might be that they're trying to avoid some sort of mass hysteria.
No, that's not the reason. The reason is we're trying to develop the weapons delivery system and duplicating the phenomena, if you will.
No, that's marvelous. Let's turn it all into a weapon.
Yeah, I can say the same thing.
There are a lot of things, if you have one of these craft, and we evidently do, and if we can duplicate the propulsion systems, the weapon systems,
the
navigation systems,
superiority over the world, Bill.
That's right. It gives us a technological leg up, which was greater than having the atomic bomb all by ourselves.
And you must remember that the Russians are going along the same lines. The sightings are only not held to the confines of America. UFO sightings are a global phenomenon. It's occurring globally. And we now just find that the Russians are pouring manpower and money into the UFO phenomenon.
They want that technology as bad as we do.
Well, sure, they want to learn the same thing that our government wants to learn, and that's how they're being propelled, what sort of energy are they using, and can they duplicate the phenomenon? The first one to crack that will have air superiority over the world.
And, you know, the government is very, you must think in these terms too, Steve. If the government ever said, yes, we've got them, and we're duplicating it, and we're going to put that into production, that could certainly prompt a preemptive strike on our ability to produce those things.
That's correct.
Yes. All right, well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Steve. I have your call. Let's see. We have Lee on the line. Lee, welcome aboard.
Hello, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping I won't have to go all the way out and turn off my radio. What I wanted to ask Larry, that's right, I'm not going to read from the Bible or anything like that, but it appears from things that I've seen there, hints and everything, that there are that there are references to UFOs and visitations to the planet way back in history.
That's correct. UFO sightings go back all the way to Bible times.
Yeah.
You might interpret Ezekiel's wheel as a UFO event occurring at that time.
Oh, he was a very good reporter. He just didn't know exactly what he was writing about, but he did the best he could.
They didn't have space eyes in those days, so they didn't know what they were writing about. And the people who changed, it appears to me, the people who changed the Bible from the references that they understood did not understand, because they didn't have space eyes either. So they left references to Jacob's ladder and the help that was received at Jericho and the pillars of fire by night and cloud by day.
That's right.
That supposedly led the nomads across the desert.
Yes.
Were nothing but spacecraft. Even when Moses went in the mountain, he was burned, it seemed to me, from radiation from the ship.
There's a lot of that, certainly in the Bible. And you talk about the space eyes, some of the medieval painters. If you go back and look at those old cathedrals, you'll see just beautiful paintings of UFOs right there in those classic paintings.
I've seen reproductions of that.
Yeah,
beautiful.
We have a 15th century painting by, the painter Giovanni, which hangs in the Vatican. If you go there, you can view this painting. It's a picture of the Madonna holding the baby Jesus. And right behind her, over her left shoulder, is
whatever sparked him to paint this, is a UFO hovering over our shoulder.
The three wise men.
Right over her right shoulder is a Roman soldier and a dog looking up at the UFO.
Mm-hmm.
So history is filled with the UFO. It's not a modern phenomenon, as it were.
That's correct. Even the Air Force admits that. We found out that they were teaching their academy, the Air Force Academy, at one time. In their logs, they had references and admitted that UFO sightings go back almost 50,000 years.
50,000? I'd say more than that.
Oh, yes.
To the dawn of time.
Yeah. Correct.
The ancient Sumerian records are filled with it.
You know, let me comment on this from straight from the Bible again about the three wise men and the bright light seen in the east. Now, it appears to me that if there was a light that bright, like a sun shining from the east, that it wouldn't have been dark, number one, in the sky. And it wouldn't have been focused, you know, directed and focused toward any one particular spot. It just would have shone all over, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I would agree with you.
So, it further appeared to me, through deduction, that it must have been some kind of ship with a spotlight on.
Or at least emanating a great deal of light.
Yeah, well...
Not necessarily a
right.
spotlight.
It's been referred that there was a light that followed them and, you know, shone down and
right.
directed their walk or whatever.
That happens out here in the valley all the time.
Yeah. Well, I look up in the sky at night and I see bright lights that would appear to normal people looking in the sky at astronomy or what have you to be a star. But they're too close to be stars.
Close inspection shows otherwise.
They're too close to be stars, which is in effect saying another sun,
right.
like so, which would make it pretty bright down here.
We think it would be.
Thank you
very much for that. Okay?
Thank you, Bill.
All right. And let me see. We have Ron ready to get on. Hello, Ron. Welcome aboard.
Hi, Bill. I would like to ask your guest if, in his research, he's ever read about any sightings in Washington State in the 50s. When I was about 7, my sister said, look, and I looked out our windows in our home, and there were 3 disc-shaped objects over this golf course in Kenmore, Washington in the early 50s, and I just wondered if anybody else saw it. And it was really distinct. I mean, it was just hovering, and then they just took off just like that. And this was really quite a long time ago.
Well, it was shortly before that the modern-day flap started.
That's correct.
In that area, by the way. So there have been a number of sightings up in there.
Yeah. How about the sightings of cigar-shaped objects? One time I saw a cigar-shaped object.
UFOs have been reported in all sizes and shapes, cigars. Some reported looking like ice cream cones, flying ice cream cones. Some looking like billiard balls attached to one another. A good interpretation of that is what you saw in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the movie, where they showed the various shapes and sizes and so forth and so on in the film.
Yeah, they did a lot of research at APRO to get that information, I understand.
Well, they did a lot of research in all the UFO groups. Center for UFO Studies, which was Dr. J. Allen Hynek's organization, had a lot of input into that film. A lot of the things that occurred in the film itself were based on actual cases, such as the shaking of the mailboxes, the pursuits by the police cars down the highways, which actually came from the Ohio-Pennsylvania chase, involving the Ohio police and the Pennsylvania chase, which was a 90-mile chase, which I participated in, by the way, in investigating that case for the Center for UFO Studies.
As well as the way the little people looked. Those were a pretty good description as the way they've been described, the little people.
Yes, that came from the Barney and Betty Hill case.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
okay, Ron?
Yeah, okay. I just thought I'd ask that.
Okay, very good.
Interesting point to make out. The documentation that we do have in our possession, Bill, also talks about crashed UFOs and alien bodies on ice.
Yes, there seem to be a lot of those. We've had Leonard Springfield on a number of times on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have to get him on again because he always has fascinating new things to tell us.
Yes, Len is the leader in that field along with Bill Moore and Stanton Friedman. Bill wrote an excellent book, which was called The Roswell Incident, which mm-hmm. talks about a crash UFO in Roswell, New Mexico. These stories have been around for years.
And while we were into the government in their cases, we did turn documents which talk about crashed UFOs down in New Mexico, and the government retrieved the bodies out of them, which were only 3 feet tall.
Right, and still have them.
That's correct.
We have Ron on the line, or that's Don, excuse me. Hello, Don.
Yeah, I think it's John.
John.
Yeah, hi, Bill.
All right.
Great show.
Thank you.
And I wanted to share an experience with both of you and then ask a question. In the 50s, I was about 13, 1956, broad daylight. There were about 20 of us that witnessed it. A flying saucer came down over our intersection, and it was about 20 stories high. It was a disc-shaped object, and, of course, being 13, I didn't think anybody believed me. I would run screaming up the street to get everybody to come out and look at it, which they did. And it hovered for about 5 or 6 seconds when we got underneath it, and then it kind of went, it kind of made a humming sound and then took off real quickly. Ever since then, obviously I've been very fascinated with UFOs, and the most intriguing book that I've read and the pictures that I've seen that I'm sure you're familiar with, I would think, is Contact of the Pleiades. Larry?
Yes, I'm very aware of the book, and I have some reservations on that.
Uh-huh. There are two of them, actually.
Yes.
Volume 1 and 2.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, I'm trying to get Volume 2. The question I had, then, is what's the latest concerning Edward Meyer? Is he still...
Edward Meyer?
Edward Meyer.
He's a very sick man.
Uh-huh.
Evidently, in the accident in which he lost his arm...
Yeah.
...is taking its toll now as far as his mental condition is concerned, and Edward most likely won't be with us much longer.
Sorry to hear that. What is the credibility from your viewpoint, Larry?
Well, I have to look at it in my eyes, and I'm a policeman, by the way. I'm a police lieutenant, and I have been for 15 years now. When the researchers attempted to get negatives from the pictures or access to the material that he claimed that came from these craft that were given to him, he denied the investigators any pieces, if you will, or negatives to the photographs, and that makes me quite skeptical.
Well, they were, I think, the only ones who really had a chance to get that the good negatives were Wendell Stevens and Lee Elders.
Right.
And they were very close vested about it. We've had them on the show a number of times concerning the Billy Meyer case. In fact, that was the subject of the very first Open Mind show. There's been a lot of controversy to swirl around the case afterwards, but I think a lot of the controversy stemmed from the fact that a lot of investigators weren't privy to the information.
Right.
And we saw some kind of infighting happening among UFO groups.
Yeah, the book that came out that accompanied it about the investigation, have you seen that book?
The Green Book?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's fascinating about that is the explanations, the questions that are asked of the, they call them cosmonauts from the Pleiades star system, of, you know, the typical questions that people would have of visitors. And the explanations were so logical about why they haven't revealed themselves, why the tremendous abilities they have can't be conveyed to us because they can't trust us with it, because the same power that would be used to heal could be used to destroy this type of thing. And that's why I found it very fascinating.
See, a lot of problems cropped up with that case. There were people that probed through Billy Meyer's garbage, if you will, and found little models in the garbage.
Oh, yeah.
When he was questioned about these things, he claimed that his sons were building them, and they had nothing to do with the photographs that were taken, but they resembled the photographs.
Uh-huh.
Well, they were building models to see if they could make models that would look as good as the actual pictures did and would withstand testing. And, of course, they could build some good models, and they did. The pictures looked good, except they didn't stand up to the testing. So it was a part of their process of winnowing out the wheat from the chaff, as it were.
Right. Well, great. Thanks very much.
Okay, Don.
Okay, bye-bye.
We're talking to Larry Fawcett tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, and our subject is on the UFO. Larry's book is Clear Intent by Prentice Hall, in which he has gone into some depth about what the government is not telling us. Information that was obtained from the government through the Freedom of Information Act, and it's fascinating reading for you, and I'm confident it'll change your mind just a bit about the reality of the extraterrestrial.
Hello.
You're on.
Okay, I called about a year or so ago about an incident I had in Washington, D.C. in August of 1966.
Okay. Bill, I can't hear her at all.
Okay, in August of 1966, we were traveling, and we were in Washington, D.C., and it was a crowd of people out. And the police were out with guns and everything. And we thought at the time, because it was a lot of racial things going on, that it was a riot or something. So then we went down this fairway, this highway, and it was a UFO about treetop level. And it went up and down and sideways, and it was about as low as the top of a tree.
That was 1952?
1966.
The 1966 D.C. sighting. Do you have any information on that one, Larry?
No, I couldn't hear her at all. Was she talking about Washington, D.C. sightings in 1952?
1966.
No, I don't.
1966. It was August the 29th at 10 p.m. because I Spy was on television. I remember that just like it happened yesterday.
All right, she, in case you didn't hear that, you say...
Not at all. I couldn't hear it, Bill.
She was in Washington, D.C., and what was that, August 29th?
August 29th of 66.
Of 1966, and the police were out, the guns were drawn, and there it was, a flying saucer in Washington, D.C., treetop level.
Yeah, it was very low.
Was that down near the mall?
Pardon?
Was that down near the mall or just whereabouts?
I don't know where, because we're from California, so I didn't know where it was.
Near the Capitol, I mean.
Yeah, but it made a clicking sound, and it stayed, it was going up and down. It was like a bank, and it would go up, and you can hear it click. And then it'll go side by side, and then it'll drop back down. And it did it for like 2 hours.
2 hours,
we went somewhere, and we went by another way, and it was still there. And it was spinning.
Something to check on. August 29th, 1966.
Yeah.
Washington, D.C., and the parks around the Capitol.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was spinning. And it made a clicking sound because you could hear it click. And it had lighted windows.
Lighted windows.
Yeah, and it was low as the top of trees.
Well, that's one to work on. Jackie, we'll dig that one out.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay, Larry?
Yeah, Bill.
Okay, that music means that we're going to take a break. You can go get a cup of coffee, if you will.
Okay.
And we're delighted to have you on the line, staying up late back there on the East Coast to regale us with stories of the UFOs here on the West Coast. Larry Fawcett is my guest, the author of Clear Intent, a must book for your library. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. We'll be right back after the news.
Documents which we learned from the Central Intelligence Agency and later from the Air Force itself, that during 1975, every one of our strategic air command bases along the northern tier of the United States were penetrated nightly during the months of October and November in 1975. There were landings within nuclear weapon storage areas. There were incidences of tampering with missile components at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana. There were scrambles out of Loring Air Force Base with our latest aircraft pursuing these things up into Canada, with the Canadian government picking up the pursuit on their side. Now, the public never read about this at all until finally people in and around the base have seen the alerts going off and seen the lights appearing in the skies at night. The press began picking up on these things. When they queried the bases, the various bases that were involved, they were met with flat denials at first, and then were told that what was occurring was that these ultra-secret bases were being penetrated by unknown, unmarked helicopters, if you will. Now, at that time, when we got the response from the Air Force that this is what they were claiming was penetrating the bases, I had wrote a letter to the Secretary of the Air Force asking him at that time what was the fastest helicopter in their arsenal. I was told at that time it was the Chinook 54C, which was capable of 250 knots. Now, we had government reports from pilots which stated that they were pursuing these objects, and the objects would accelerate to Mach 1, Mach 2, Mach 3. We certainly didn't have a helicopter, and we still don't, that can travel that fast.
Not even Airwolf could do that.
That's right.
Well, it's they get caught in a web of their own lies, don't they?
That's right. Another interesting case occurred at Malmstrom Air Force Base over the Kilo 7 site, which is just 20 miles outside of the Judith Gath region. Now, we not only depended upon the government documents that we were getting, we seeked out those people that were mentioned in the documents and interviewed them on a one-on-one basis, if you will. and we found out that this specific incident, which occurred over the Kilo 7 site, where the alarms, which are 100 feet underground to the missile site, if you will, in the launch control facilities, began going off. The next thing in line is that they call in what they call SAT teams, strategic alert teams. These are five or six armed personnel, if you will, that are responsible for site security. When the alarms began going off, and by the way, they have no television cameras topside over the site, these guards started to head into the area. As they got to within 1 mile of the Kilo 7 site, they began radioing into the launch control facilities that they were seeing an object, as they described it, as being the size of a football field, circular, hovering over the missile site. Now, when this object was over the site, all the guards were ordered into the site itself. They approached to within 1/2 mile and then refused to go any further. They were intimidated by what they were seeing.
I think I would be, too.
The object lifted up and went straight up in the air. The witnesses told us, some of the guards that we interviewed and were able to find. We later went to NORAD, if you will, and applied the Freedom of Information Act on NORAD, and lo and behold, we surfaced a document which talks about NORAD picking up the object at 1,000 feet and carrying it all the way until their sensors lost it to infinity. They describe it as being the size of a football field and circular.
And that's now public information.
Yes, that's in the book.
And yet there are people who say, well, if the government believed in UFOs, they would tell us. In their own way, the government is telling us, aren't they?
Yes, in a way they are.
It's almost as if they would like to have this albatross lifted from around their neck that they put around it about 30, 40 years ago.
Yes, we've heard stories that, you know, the documents that we've obtained were really meant to be released, if you will. You just had to get the right combination, that the government really wants to tell the story, but they don't know how to get out of this dilemma that they're in for 20 years of saying there is no such animal, and that people that report these things are either crazy nuts or profiteers.
Well, it'd be easy to say that there were some misguided generals along the way, and perhaps security officials, and blame them. They're all retired now anyway, and start afresh and go on.
Well, the problem is, when you have very good cases like this, they're able to keep the secrecy intact by having the individuals involved sign secrecy documents in accordance with UNEP 146, which carries some severe penalties if the observer or viewer of the object, military personnel, tells of these incidents. They're subject to some heavy fines and some time in jail.
Or worse.
Or worse, right. There are even incidences we found where people were made to sign lifetime secrecy oaths. These were the cases where people were involved in retrieval of crash UFOs.
And astronauts to the moon.
That's right.
And things like that. Well, let's go back to our callers and see what's on their mind tonight. And anytime any of these come to your mind, Larry, feel free just to interrupt and tell us about them. I know there's so many fascinating things in your book. We have Merle on the line. Hello, Merle.
Hi. Some years ago, I read this about this Project Blue Book, and Major Kehoe was, I believe, headed that up. Is that correct?
No, Donald Kehoe was a retired Marine major who formed a group called the National Investigating Committee on Aerial Phenomena.
Okay. What is his status now? What is he doing?
He's retired. He actually was the spearhead into the government, if you will, his organization. They kept trying to get Congress to intervene into getting a study done by Congress into the UFO phenomena. He was almost very successful at times. He then got quite old and retired out, and NICAP finally closed his doors. Where my organization, which I formed, which is Citizens Against UFO Secrecy, picked up the fight, and at that time in 66, when Congress passed the Freedom of Information Act, which enabled the public to gain access to government documents, we began filing our Freedom of Information Act request and picked up the fight where Donald Kehoe left off.
Well, we do need to have a congressional investigation of it.
Well, that's our spearhead and that's our goal. But
we almost had a United Nations investigation of it.
That's right. That was in 1978.
But the United States put the kibosh on that.
Well, it just so happened that the country that brought us into the United Nations at that time was what is that country we just had the, we raided that island, Guyana, Guyana, or whatever it was, had brought us into the United Nations, and,
Grenada,
that's it, and, we were there 3 days, and the third day that we were there in the United Nations, the country had a coup and was overthrown, and the United Nations tabled the UFO problem into what they call the Outer Space Committee, and there it lay today.
Nearly had a good investigation going. But
yes, and we're not giving up, though. We're going to try to get back in into the United Nations and try to proceed on that thing and also have a congressional hearing done. I think we're going to be very successful, Bill.
The only one that seems to have an investigation of any kind of quality happening to it right now is the House of Lords of the British Parliament.
Yes, in England. You're right.
Okay. Does that help you, Merle?
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
We have Dan on the line. Hello, Dan.
Hi there, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing fine.
Hello, Larry.
Hello.
Hi, this is Dan calling. Larry, first of all, I just wanted to thank you for all the tremendous effort you put into your work.
Well, thank you very much.
My question is, what is the most important document that you feel you have uncovered so far from the Freedom of Information Act request?
Well, I think the most explosive documents that we have, and I say documents, are two cases that we are working on now, which are in the book. There is new information that's coming to light on one almost daily now, and that is the incidences that occurred in December of 80 at RAF Bentwaters, which is a NATO base in England. To bring your listeners up, those who are not familiar with the case, is that we had a gentleman approach me here in Connecticut while I was giving a lecture on UFOs, and after the lecture he came up to me and he said to me, sir, they do happen to hear about a UFO landing in England and beings getting off the craft and some type of communication taking place with the military people on the base. And I said, no. And he said, well, let me tell you about it. I'm one of the security officers who was stationed with the 81st Tactical Fighter Wing at RAF Bentwaters, and I was present during that contact and landing. He began to tell us a fantastic story, if you will, with us first taking a skeptical eye towards it, because we've heard these type of cases come up before, and when we would investigate it, we'd find out that there was no basis of fact to it. But the man seemed very sincere to me, and he began telling me of the story, which I'll relate to you, which involved him being on a guard post late at night and with a jeep pulling up and a lieutenant and a sergeant in the jeep, and he gave me their names, by the way, being taken off his guard post and told that they were going on to a security thing, being taken down to the motor pool where they filled these gas-operated light alls, if you will, then being transported to the main gate of Bentwaters where they picked up a convoy of trucks, drove out about 5 miles towards the sister base, which is RAF Woodbridge. They then made a right turn into a forest, which is called the Rendlesham Forest. There they pulled into the forest about a half a mile, stopped the trucks at a staging area. All the weapons were taken off the security police, if you will. They were then broken down into four-man groups and fanned out and began going into the woods. Now, as they were going into the woods, the animals were just running out in droves, the deer, if you will, rabbits, everything. As they went in deeper into the woods, now this was in the morning, in the early morning hours, if you will, they began seeing lights coming through the woods. There were helicopters over above from the Woodbridge base, if you will, circling the forest. As they get in closer to the light, they came into an opening in the field. When my witness arrived there, he claimed that the field was surrounded by military people, and in the middle of the field was what he described as something looking like a transparent aspirin in the middle of the field. He could hear radio communication between the people on the ground and those in the helicopters, and he could hear one of the helicopter pilots saying, here it comes from the east. They looked to the east, and then they saw a red ball come over the trees, hover over this transparent, if you will, maybe mist, as he described it, hovering over the mist for a minute, and then this orange red ball breaking into, or exploding, as he said, with no sound, into multi colors. When these colors dissipated, there was this craft on the ground. Now, he told me at that time, did you ever see the movie Star Wars? And I said, sure, I did. And he said, well, that's the only way I can describe what I've seen in that field. That ship looked just like some of them craft, if you will, in Star Wars. They then, his platoon or his squad of security personnel were then ordered in very close to the craft. He got to within 5 feet of it, along with the base commander, who was Colonel Charles Holt. At that point, beings, if you will, started to float out the bottom of the craft. These were very small creatures, very large heads, three feet tall. At this point, some type of communication began between the base commander and the beings. Now we had a story that was unbelievable, if you will. So I began filing Freedom of Information Act requests on the 81st Tactical Fighter Wing at Bentwaters.
In England?
My requests were met with flat denials in the beginning, saying that no such incident occurred at Bentwaters. They had no records. I specifically asked for photographs due to the fact that my witness had told me that photographs were taken, that the craft left indentations on the ground, which the Air Force investigated. There were tape recordings made by the military as the incident was going on, if you will. And I requested that all in my FOIA request. Again, I was met with flat denial, so I put my researchers on it, and lo and behold, in the 3rd Air Force, we surfaced the document. The incident happened exactly as the person told us. Now, once we had that...
That was a British sighting, right?
No, that was an American sighting.
Oh, I thought that was the RAF base someplace.
Yes, well, it's called RAF Bentwaters. It's a shared base between us and the RAF. There are actually no RAF personnel on the base.
Yeah, that's why I was confused, because Freedom of Information Act would not apply to Britain. I kept on referring to RAF.
Well, that was
base.
Interesting, because they tried to pull that on us, too, that the incident did not occur on United States Air Force jurisdiction. Right, that's what they tried to pull on us. And they claimed that there were no official documents, but we found that out to be a lie. Because I did surface a document where it showed that the Air Force did the investigations on that case. That a craft did land, did leave marks on the ground, did leave radiation, and they did a thorough investigation on it. The only thing that was left out of the document, and you could see that the document was pieced together and there were parts missing, was the part about the alien beings being seen, if you will. Once that got into our hands, that document, that began opening a lot of doors. With me doing talk shows, we began surfacing more witnesses to the event, if you will. Since the release of the book, we have now turned 14 first-hand witnesses to that event in Bentwaters, all here in the States now. Plus, in my request, I had stated that I had asked for a tape recording that was made in the field at that night. I even placed a long-distance phone call to Bentwaters and spoke to Lieutenant Colonel Holt, who told me at first in the conversation that there was no tape recordings made. Then in the next breath, he said there was, but the tape recordings were destroyed.
Sure.
For a person who's telling me that the tape recordings were destroyed, I now have that tape in my possession.
What did they talk about?
They talk about the object coming down and landing. They talk about the landing site itself with the indentations on the ground. You can hear the Geiger counters going off. They're very excited. They began seeing other lights, which we were unaware of, due to the fact that my witness didn't tell me that. While they were doing the investigation, objects were coming down out of the sky. In some instances, they get almost within 250 feet of the witnesses there, the military people there. The tape is edited. You can hear it. It cuts off in spots and it picks up in the middle of a conversation. Our understanding is that it's an excerpt, if you will, a 20-minute excerpt of a two-hour tape.
I see.
No recordings of the conversation between the base commander and the aliens, then?
No. We have now turned that case over to... I was in Washington, D.C., where I held a press conference in front of the Pentagon when I was doing the promotion for Clear Intent. And I had challenged all the news media that was there. It's very interesting, Bill. There was over 30 reporters and papers there at that time when I held that press conference in Washington. And I kind of challenged the news media in a sense that I said that... for years now, for the last 4 years, we've been gathering the information, and no reputable newspaper would pick up the story or do an investigative journalistic investigation on the documents. We had even went to 60 Minutes and asked them to do an investigative story on it, and they refused. I kind of challenged the newspapers to pick up the stories,
And lo and behold, the cable news network did pick up the stories, and they are doing the investigation on the Bentwater case now. And from my last contact with them, which was this morning, they are very, very successful, by the way. They're going to prove that case to be real, exactly as I told it to you.
Well, I'll leave it to cable news network to get out there and get the job done.
Well, they're going to get the scoop.
Larry, what do you think, what kind of suggestion can you give to me and other people who are very serious-minded about the subject? What frontier area of research could we all move in force that you think would help break through, you might say, the silence barrier?
Well, I think the answer is exactly what we're doing now, is to get into government and get the senators and congressmen involved, because they've been duped also. There have been a lot of hearings on UFOs, but you remember they're hearing only one side from the military and not the true side, which we found out. We even found reports where congressmen have asked for hearings with the Air Force and were lied to.
And that, of course, is contempt of Congress, I would think, in many instances. We'd like to see a full-blown congressional investigation with presidential pardon to the astronauts and others involved in NASA that would allow them to go ahead and speak up, even though they had signed the national security power.
Yes, we wrote a letter to the President of the United States, both in Nixon's time and in Reagan's time, asking the President to release those military personnel from UNAP 146 due to the fact that the government claims that UFOs are not real. Therefore, if UFOs are not real, there is no need for UNAP 146. And to release those people so they can tell their UFO stories. And they flatly refuse to do that.
Even the Reagan administration.
That's right.
All right, just one last comment, Larry, and I'll hang up. What edge, or what you might say, information do you have regarding astronauts on the moon and UFOs? What perspective do you have of this whole, you might say, subject?
Well, I have talked to people who have known some of the astronauts. Off the record, they will tell you of UFO events. On the record, they will tell you they never saw UFOs. Our information has it that they have some beautiful photographs of UFOs. Even the time when we had the Apollo shots where the landings and the buggies were on the moon, that the astronauts were actually seeing UFOs hovering or landing on the craters in and around where they were. And there were codes used, by the way. You remember the phrases, yes, there is a Santa Claus.
Yes.
In one of them. Well, that was a code saying, yes, things are real. They're here.
Yeah, that was Lovell on Apollo 8, circling from behind the moon on Christmas.
That's right. Now, the only astronaut that's actually come forward with testimony has been McDivitt. And he gave his testimony in the United Nations about his...
Man, I thought that was Gordon Cooper.
No, Cooper talked at the United Nations about the sightings that he had in Germany prior to him becoming a astronaut.
Cooper didn't go to the moon.
No.
No, I realize that.
McDivitt was the only one that gave testimony in the United Nations about the object following his spacecraft, which he took some photographs of it. And when he landed, the photos, of course, were taken by personnel and developed, and he later... never got to see the photos until Life magazine printed the pictures, and his claim was that what was in Life magazine was not what he took photographs of.
There are some photographs I have seen from Apollo 14. One is one of the most beautiful flying saucers you ever saw, landed. And another one is of a huge dish antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And by huge, I think it's 1.2 miles across the dish, and it isn't pointed toward the Earth.
Uh-huh.
We don't know how to make them that big.
But the problem is, like I said, off the record, if you get to know some of the astronauts, they'll tell you some marvelous stories of events that occur. On the record, they'll flatly deny it. And probably the reason for that is that they're still governed by secrecy oaths that they were made to sign at the time that they were part of the program.
And probably willingly signed them, as far
That's
as
right.
it goes.
I think the area that is just most fascinating is the NASA-UFO connection. It seems to me more tight than any of the even the secret agencies that you've been secrecy agencies that you've been dealing with. Seems like there is a literally steel wall about getting information from them.
Well, we've tried to get into NASA many a time, and I say get in, I'm by utilizing the Freedom of Information Act, because we do have informants that do work for NASA that are feeding us information also. The story is just dying to be told.
Dying is the word.
And the problem is the oaths that people are made to sign, and that's what's holding everything up.
Maybe we can break that.
Well, Larry, thank you very much, and I really support you in your future investigation.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Good night, everybody.
Dan, appreciate your call. It's 10:30 in Los Angeles. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Larry Fawcett, the author of Clear Intent, an investigator of the UFO phenomena in general, but certainly the government's enormous effort to keep you and I in the dark about it that has been going on for decades now. And we'll be back to Larry and with our callers in just a moment. ...of the UFO, and he has as much information about that as anyone in the world, I would imagine.
Oh, thank you, Bill.
Donnie, it's your turn to get to us.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
First off, I've never seen a UFO myself. My mother once did, but I never have. But I still believe that there are UFOs and highly sophisticated beings exist on other planets. I have a couple questions on the beings themselves, if that's okay.
Sure. Can you speak up, then?
Sure. One question I have is, are there different facial characteristics of these beings, or do they all look alike?
It's interesting. The smaller creatures, the 3-foot-tall ones that have the very large heads and large eyes, are all reported as if they are brother and sister, if you will, almost like clones.
Uh-huh.
If you see five, they all look the same.
Uh-huh.
There are reports of humanoid types, if you will, our size, maybe a little smaller, with our characteristics, that sometimes accompany the smaller ones, if you will.
I see. Okay, another
question.
And
then you have the reports of the robot type, robot types being seen, such as the Pascagoula, Mississippi case, where the two fishermen were abducted and taken aboard a craft, and they reported seeing a creature that almost looked like a robot.
Could he have been a robot then?
Speculate and say from the testimony that they were giving that it probably was some type of robot that they were seeing or abducted by.
But the most common one that has been reported is the little guy.
Right, that's the one I was kind of referring to, the ones that are 3 to 4 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got to remember something. With the being that's being reported, the small creature or the large creature, they have two arms, two legs, fingers, eyes, nose, mouth, facial features, and so forth, that these are somewhere in our evolution chain. They're Homo sapiens.
Mm-hmm.
They're humanoid.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
That was kind of another question. Are there different sexes? Has there been a report of men and women?
The only case where I actually saw a woman reported was actually in two. One which took place in Brazil where there was an abduction and the gentleman was seduced by a female. And the other case occurred in Arizona with a gentleman by the name of Travis Walt, where he did see a female.
So there are differences then,
pardon?
As far as facial characteristics, other than the ones that were perhaps clones.
Yes.
I see. Well, that's interesting because I've always wondered that. I didn't know if they all looked alike or if there were differences.
Well, some of them look like us, Dottie, and if they were walking around, you wouldn't notice them.
I see.
Well, Bill, if you believe rumors and stories, and I get my stories from the military, they are walking among us.
Okay, that's very good. Thank
Your neighbor
you,
could be a space alien. In fact, Brad Steiger put out a list of things to look for. And
you're talking about the star people.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, Dottie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, I'd like to just interrupt here for
sure.
a minute and tell your listening audience that I will be in L.A. on December 10th at the Masonic Temple in L.A. from 7 to 10 p.m. It's free to the public, by the way. Being that the temple will only hold 300 people, they're asking that anybody interested in attending that lecture that night call for reservations. And could I give a telephone number, Bill?
Certainly. Go right ahead and let's do it again so the folks don't miss it.
Okay. And as those that want to go, it's free. Just place a call to 436-8784 and make your reservations, and I'll see you December 10th, which is a Monday night down there.
Monday night, December 10th at the Masonic Temple. What's the address?
In L.A.
The downtown one?
I believe so. Well, they can get the exact address from that telephone number that I gave.
All right, give it again.
Okay, it's 436-8784.
Okay. All right, I think we have George on the line now. George?
Hello, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I want to ask Larry, I'm very interested when he said that
the main purpose of the government was ascertaining military secrets from a craft that they have in their possession. Could you tell me some backup to that conclusion that the government actually has one of these UFOs in their possession?
Yes, the information that we have, they have more than one. There's been something like 40 crashes or 50 crashes since 1947. Of course, they've been studying these that are in their possession since that time. There are indications that they are, our government is now experimenting with a prototype UFO, if you will, which sprung out of those investigations on crash UFOs.
Okay, well, let me ask you this then. UFOs apparently are somewhat shy for the simple reason that they never actually have been seen, let's say, in the middle of Times Square by, let's say, half a million people, let's say, on New Year's Eve or something like that. So,
I think you missed the beginning part of the show.
I've been listening right from the beginning.
Oh, well, okay. Did you hear the story of the Brewster sightings where thousands of people saw them just this last summer?
Yes, but the point, I heard that, but excuse me, you say there were thousands of people, but in other words, thousands of people didn't come across and all at once say they all saw it. There was people that said there were thousands of people there. I don't know how many people said they saw it among the thousands of people.
At one town hall meeting in the village of Brewster, over 1,200 people showed up, and over 800 of them, were eyewitnesses to the event.
Well, okay, I'll go along with that.
That's a lot of people there.
Yes, you're right, but what I'm saying is this now. In other words, even if that were so, we can't really say that it was a flying saucer. It could have been a hoax. It could have been somebody flying something up there. What I'm saying is this.
No, it couldn't have been that. Nothing flies at like 25 and 30 miles an hour and stops and is that large with huge bright lights over it, over facilities, quite often nuclear plants. That was sighted by very reputable people, hundreds of them, and we can't say that it didn't happen. We have to say that it did happen.
Okay,
and
all
there
right.
It was.
Well, I'll go along with that, but here's my point, though. My point is I have to go with the conclusion that these UFOs are somewhat shy. Otherwise, they would just come and announce themselves.
I don't know why they would want to come down into the snake pit.
I wouldn't say they're shy because they're reported every day.
Well, okay, now, here's what I want to tie in, though. I want to tie in this my conclusion of shyness with the idea that you're saying that the government has one of these UFOs in their possession. Now, you would think, if my conclusion is correct that they're shy, why would they allow a government to have one of their craft in their possession when they have so much power they could just take it back? And not only that, why would they allow their beings who are dead? You'd think that being so intelligent, they would be more civilized than we are and would think about burying the dead more than we do. Why would they just, you know, say, well, all right, you know, let them do what they will with these dead brothers of ours and, you know, the spacecraft? It seems like an inconsistency there between what I think is their shyness in general with them allowing the spacecraft and their dead brethren to just, you know, all right, let them have them.
Well, they're not shy with the military. Did you hear me say that there's an ongoing contact since 1970? They are dealing with our military and are freely moving in and out of our airspace with our military sanction.
Well, are they also dealing with the Russian military?
I can't tell you that. I don't know.
Well, now, let me ask you this, then. Why would they be dealing with the military as opposed to everybody else?
Well, from the information that we have, there's an exchange of technology going on. We're exchanging something for technology.
What could we be exchanging for their technology?
You got to remember, they're a long way from home.
That's right.
And they may need some things on this planet for their own survival.
What could they need that they couldn't get with all this technological power they have?
Okay, hold on. There again, I can only give you what I hear from my sources. And that is, they're here to take water.
Well, why can't they just go in the reservoir in the middle of the night and take the water?
Well, they do.
So why do they have to make this agreement with the military to give them up all these technological secrets of theirs for some water to drink?
Well, you've got to remember in the early years when UFOs showed up, the first thing that occurred was jet aircraft were scrambled after them. They were fired upon. In some incidences, they were knocked down.
Well, what does that have to do with today? If they wouldn't have the same fears. I mean, with their intelligence, they would be intelligent enough to leave back the past and go with the present circumstances.
Well,
they wouldn't allow the past to haunt them forever.
Some type of deal was made where they freely can take water it now. And also, there's another phenomena that cropped up, which is the cattle mutilations that are occurring out in the West and have been since the late 60s now, which is part of the phenomena where they're freely mutilating cattle on the ranges, if you will, and are not bothered whatsoever when they're doing this.
Well, who would bother them? Even if there wasn't an agreement with the military, what I'm saying, with
you
this
don't
kind
seem
of
to
power
understand.
They have, should
that
they?
We have had the ability to shoot them down and have done that in the past. And why do you want to come down and whenever you can make an agreement not to be shot down and all you have to is some water and food?
We have shot down UFOs.
You're not listening, George.
On that?
Yes, we have shot down UFOs. UFOs have been knocked down in situations where aircraft were scrambled after, and we did fire upon them and knock them down.
Well, what's your evidence on that?
Evidence is documentation that I have from the government.
Okay, now you actually have documentation which says conclusively that this, and it describes the UFO, and it says where it can, where it's stored and everything else?
Yes.
Well, now, I would think that the New York Times would be very interested in that kind of hard evidence. Now, why don't you go to the New York Times and present them with this kind of hard evidence as opposed to hearsay evidence?
They have his book.
Astronauts and other things like that.
We told you that in the beginning. We had went to the papers with the documentation.
Well, I don't think that if
they're
you go to the New York Times with hard documentation like you say you have, which describes what the government themselves in a secret document describes this phenomenon, I don't think the New York Times would turn down something like that.
Well, whether you think it or not, they did.
Well, okay, then. There's nothing more I got to say about it, then. Because all I can do is take your word for it over the airwaves, and I have no way of proving it one way or the other, so
okay.
That's enough for me.
I'm not telling you to take my word. Get involved. You dig. You're a citizen. You have access to freedom of information. You dig.
Well, okay, Larry.
We're trying, George.
Okay, then. Keep trying.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, bye.
It is a hard thing for a lot of people to understand how major media, or very few major media, will pay much attention to this story. However, I would point out the KABC does, and we have a larger circulation than the Los Angeles Times, so we can call that major media.
Well, it's interesting, Bill, as we said before, here we had a book that we put out to get the word out to the public, which took off like wildfire. Since July, it's in its fifth printing. Most of the papers on the East Coast have done excellent reviews on it. We haven't seen one bad review. We did send the book to the Los Angeles Times, and they refused to do a review on the book.
Well, you have to understand the Times. That's typical. Okay. I think we have Steve on the line. Steve, what's on your mind?
Good evening, Bill. How are you?
Fine.
Good. Larry, nice to speak with you.
Same here, sir.
Good. I wanted to share with you an experience that both my wife and myself observed. And basically, I'm going to tell that to you and then leave you with two questions that I would like to perhaps have answered.
Okay.
The first question is, where do people either write to or talk to when they see such an observance in an urban area? And secondly, is there any possibility that what one may see could have something to do with government surveillance of some sort? And basically what my wife and I observed in May of 84 in the Los Angeles area was we were in a weekday night, we were looking out towards the western sky, and she happened to be studying at that point in time, and she saw something hovering and had been observing it for about 5 minutes, and she called me into the other room, and I looked, and I saw what we both agreed was a triangular-shaped object in the low western sky going towards, the Malibu Beach area. And we observed it, and I was so intrigued that I went to get my film camera to take some pictures, of which I did. And we observed this object, which, amazingly, and this is also another question, is this sort of a predominant sort of sighting phenomena of seeing something that would have sort of an arcing effect? If you're looking at, say, an object, and this was triangular-shaped, it almost was as if you were looking at, say, a diamond or a crystal in the sky with some sort of reflections arcing off of it. And we watched this for a good 10 or 15 minutes, saw it then go towards the northeast sky across, say, from the Malibu area, and those listeners from Los Angeles can understand, going from, say, the west Malibu area over northeast, over the San Fernando Valley, perhaps towards maybe the desert area, the high desert area. And by the time we tracked it over the desert area, over going that northeast pattern, it had shot across the sky very quickly. And at that point, we were amazed. And I have said, well, let's call up some of the local television stations or universities and see if anyone else had seen what we had seen. And at that point, we called UCLA at the astronomy department and got no reply. And we even called KABC, the television arm of your network, with the weather department there and had no response. And we even went as far as calling JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which I would imagine with these people having the knowledge that they do with science and with space, they would have some knowledge, and all we were able to contact was the night janitor, who had no reply to us. So my question is, aside from what we saw, we were two individuals who were, for the most part, skeptics. I mean, I wouldn't believe you could see anything, and we both saw something, and at that point we wanted some verification, and we live in a large urban area. We're not able to find any verification. So my question is, how do you verify something, or who else can you share information with? Then the other question that perhaps answered this was after a few months after this was, we were under the impression from some people who we had talked with who were involved with the Olympics, with the preparation, that there was quite a bit of intelligence or surveillance going on in the Southern California area with high-speed, perhaps, helicopters of some sort that have to do with the security features. So those are my two questions. I'd like to hear what both Larry and Bill have to say is, one, in an urban area, who can you contact? And two, is there a possibility that what we're seeing is just maybe our own government doing some sort of surveillance?
You said you took some photographs?
Yes, I did take some photographs.
How did they come out?
Unfortunately, they did not come out. I can only assume that the distance that I was shooting the photographs, this object that we saw must have been a good 5 to 10 miles away, and with the shutter speed holding it, you know, the way you could, the light element just didn't come out on the film.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, there's no perhaps hard evidence, you know, of the saying, here's my photograph, but there was something we definitely saw. And then, amazingly, once you see something and you're so amazed, you call the authorities, or so, you know, the media, scientific agencies, and one even agency said, what have you been smoking?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's, you know, people kind of laugh things off.
Well, Steve, next time it happens here in the Los Angeles area, call me.
I certainly will, and I'll be glad to do that.
And as far as there are other numbers to call, I think you can call Jay Hynek's organization
Bill?
There in Phoenix.
Hello, Bill?
Yeah.
Yes, if your listeners would like to know of a place where they can call in their UFO reports with dignity, they can get a hold of Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who is the head of the Center for UFO Studies, by writing P.O. Box 44990, Phoenix, Arizona. The zip code is 85064.
Well, that's good to know. Was there ever any information with regards to when we had the Olympics, going back, Larry, to any reports back in the summer of 84 of anything that perhaps may have occurred in the Los Angeles area?
No, I didn't hear of any, and I'm sure Alan didn't, because I would have heard.
And I didn't.
I didn't see any in the media and so forth, and from your excitement and what you're seeing, I feel definite that it's something out of the ordinary. I'm sure you've seen aircraft before in the air, and you're sure it wasn't an aircraft.
Well, my first intuition was that perhaps this was some helicopter of some sort, but the way it was able to hover and the lights that arced, that was the intriguing part of it, the way there was this arcing effect, and it would almost, at one point, because we observed this thing for a good 15 minutes, and it would kind of disappear, but if you kept your eyes trained, it would reappear, and then when it finally vaulted or shot across the northeast sky through the, you know, Los Angeles basin area, I mean, it moved at such a speed and velocity that it would have eliminated a decent observation that is, say, a helicopter or an airplane or even a jet of some sort.
Or an ultralight.
Exactly.
So you know you saw something very unusual in the sky.
I certainly did, or we did, too.
Well, I would always...
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make, Bill. You know, people see aircraft lights every night and they pay no attention to it. But yet when they see something very unusual, it catches their eye and they say, my God, their mind starts wrestling. That's not an aircraft. That's something out of the ordinary. And what this man is describing is something that's out of the ordinary. It doesn't fit the realm of rationale that it is an aircraft.
So the easiest thing would be to call me or reach J. Allen Hynek's group in Phoenix, Arizona.
Well, I see. Bill, I could reach you right through the station there.
Sure. I'm here all the time.
Good. Good to know.
Okay.
All right. Been a pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Good night.
And we have David.
Yeah, Bill, this is Dave.
And David, you know what I want you to, can I get you to hold for just a second?
Okay.
I'm getting behind in business here, and we've got to take care of some of that.
Yeah, I've been sitting here spellbound listening to these incredible reports that Larry's been reciting, and unfortunately what I have is nothing anywhere near that dramatic. But I wonder if either he or you has seen the article in the paper today. This was in the Daily Breeze. It says, geologists mystified over slab of displaced earth. Now, this was a chunk of earth weighing many tons. It was plucked out of a wheat field in Grand Coulee, Washington, as though someone had used a giant cookie cutter and put down right side up 73 feet away. It was held together only by the roots. And they said that the shape and thickness of the piece exactly matched the hole that was left behind, just like a piece of a jigsaw puzzle, although it was rotated about 20 degrees. And it wasn't moved in a straight line. They found dribbling dirt marks that showed that it was moved in an arc.
I haven't seen the Daily Breeze today, so I missed the story.
Yeah, anyway, it was about 2 feet thick at the thickest part and 18 inches thick at the thinnest part. Doesn't say whether it was oval or what shape it was.
Hmm.
But anyway, it said the hole was not a crater. It had vertical walls and a fairly flat bottom. It was almost as though it had been cut out with a giant cookie cutter. He said, but the roots were not cut. They were just dangling.
Interesting.
Now, I remember reading an incident similar to this many years ago. I believe it happened in France, where they had a hole that was left after a UFO landed. And it was the same sort of situation where the roots, very delicate root patterns were left dangling.
Well,
I
don't know whether we can connect that to a UFO or not.
Yeah.
I'd like for you to send me a copy of that. I don't have the grease. Would you do that, David?
Okay. I'm sure it does relate to it, because there's absolutely no way that could have happened mechanically.
We'll try to trace that down. There's our orchestra, which means we're going to take a break right now, David. Thank you for sharing that with us. Larry, stay on another hour. We'll break for news, have another cup of coffee. We'll be right with you. I'm Bill Jenkins. Yes. Because now they say that they are a part of, they present a national security problem, and therefore they can't give us any specific information because of it, which is an odd thing for something that doesn't exist. And all of that is from the government, and we have to tip our hat and thanks to Larry Fawcett and his group, who have been working diligently, often going to the Supreme Court, to get this information from the government about the UFO. And he's put so much of it in his book called Clear Intent. And Clear Intent is a book that you should have, and I hope that you get it soon. It will be a definite eye-opener for you. And we're not talking about just hypothesis here or supposition. We're talking about government documents, documents that you can go get. You'll get the document number, everything with it. Find out for yourself. Larry, that's really what we're after, is involvement of the American people to have the government come clean, isn't it?
That's correct. If we can get a movement going across the country, we can get the UFO out into the open and finally come to a solution to the problem, if you will.
We're not really going, you know, trying to get the government to cough up some really valid national secrets.
No, that's correct. I'm not interested in secrets that our government has involving a craft that they're designing or is duplicated of the UFO, if you will, or secrets that should remain secrets. We're just after the UFO, then that's it.
The fact that it does exist, that it has been here.
That's correct.
And we need to start adjusting ourselves to that psychologically.
That's correct. And also, another reason that we're doing this, we're tired of the government maligning people that do report UFO events. And through the years, I've seen very reputable people, after reporting UFO events, lose their jobs due to the ridicule that was created by the government in and around the city.
However, Jimmy Carter got a good job after he reported his UFO incident.
Correct. Very good. Listen, Bill, before we go any further, I'd like to do that little commercial again, if it's okay with you.
It certainly is.
I know you were saying in the beginning of the program the book is hard to find, and I would suggest to your listeners to try your bookstores first, and if you can't find the book, you can obtain it by writing Unicorn Limited at P.O. Box 651, Coventry, Connecticut, 06238. The book sells for $8.95 for soft cover, plus $1.50 postage and handling, or $17.95 for hardcover, plus $1.50 postage and handling. All books will be autographed by me, and we'll get them to you as quick as we can. The other thing I wanted to say, Bill, was on December 10th, which is a Monday night, for 3 hours, I will be in the Masonic Temple in Los Angeles, which is open free to the public. The hall only holds, from what I understand, about 300 people. And if you want to attend, you have to call for reservations. And you can do that by dialing 436-8784. That's 436-8784. Okay, Bill, I'm ready to go with more.
Well, I want you to give that address again and give it slowly.
Okay.
So now that everybody has their pencil ready.
Okay, this is for the book. You can obtain the book by writing Unicorn Limited, P.O. Box 651, Coventry, Connecticut, 06238. That's $8.95 plus $1.50 for postage for a soft cover, and $17.95 plus $1.50 postage and handling for hardcover. All books will be autographed. That's to obtain the book. The other thing is December 10th, which is a Monday night. For 3 hours, I'll be in the Masonic Temple in L.A. You have to call for reservations. It's free to the public. The telephone number is 436-8784. And it'll be a night that you'll never forget. We're going to be talking about the Bentwater incident and some other things, and I will be playing the newly released tape recording that I have from Bentwaters on the incident.
I'm going to try to get down there myself, Larry.
I was looking forward to seeing you, Bill. And the last on how people can get involved in the work that Citizens Against UFO Secrecy is doing, CAUSE. And right now we have no membership organization. There are only 6 people in CAUSE, including myself. The Freedom of Information Act is free to the public. But when you enter into courts, it cost us $27,000 for the CIA suit and close to $18,000 for the NSA suit. We raised that funds by our newsletter that CAUSE puts out, which is called Just CAUSE. It deals strictly with government cover-up and the UFO. And if anybody is interested in obtaining the news bulletin, that's $10 for a quarterly bulletin, and they can write to Just CAUSE, P.O. Box 218, Coventry, Connecticut, 06238. And let's go on with the show, Beth.
All right. And we took all that information down. We'll pass it on to lovely Lita Mack and broadcast information here in case you missed it, and she'll get it on to you. Okay, back to our callers. We have Paula on the line. Paula, thank you for waiting.
Oh, thank you. Hello?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've been interested in this for quite a while because, well, let me explain how this thing started. Okay, I met a guy in Long Beach, and his name is Unc, and he communicates with the small creek, you know, the small ones,
mm-hmm.
for years and years. Okay, it all started when he was on a farm when he was a little boy, and he communicates with them. Okay, when I met him, I didn't know anything about it, really. You know, I was always interested in it, but I didn't know. And he told me, would you like to meet them? I said, yeah. He said, well, you're going to see something that's going to scare you to death. That's how it started, okay. So if I was by myself, I don't think anybody would have believed me. But I was in this apartment, in my apartment with my second husband, and we were in the room, and this big light came in the room, you know. And it just went right through the ceiling. There was no ceiling there, nothing. It stayed in the room for a long time. And I thought, my God, what's this? You know, we both, you know, we just thought all kinds of things. So the next day, we put two and two together and went over to Unc's. And he said, yeah, those were my friends. He said, I said, well, what were they doing? He said, well, they were just saying hello. It's a good sign. But when they came through the window, it sounded like the window cracked, you know, and like glass was all over me. That's how it felt, you know. So he was a witness on it, too. Okay.
All you saw was lights?
Yeah, all we saw was a big, enormous light. And it was a light that I didn't know what it was. I thought, you know, I thought it was the end of the world or atom bomb exploded or something. But this big light just stayed in the room, you know.
A white light, really?
Yeah, it was a big white light, and it was a real good feeling, you know, light. But after that, my eyes burnt for a long time. Okay, then it was probably after I left the state and everything, and I came back. And I met this guy next door, Gerard Pernard. He's an actor.
Okay.
Okay, he's an actor.
I want you to speed this story up, Paula. We got a lot of calls.
Okay. Gerard Pernard, he's an actor. He said that he met a girl. She gave him a piece of paper. She said, hello, I'm from outer space. Him and his three friends were planning to go to Las Vegas. Okay, they went to Las Vegas. They went to the house where the address was. They thought they were going to go to a party. They said when we got there, it was an empty house. There was a spaceship there. Okay.
A spaceship?
Yeah. He went on the spaceship. There's a guy standing there. He said, hello, Gerard. We've been expecting you an hour ago. He went on the spaceship. They were there for 3 days and three nights. And I said, well, what did you eat? He said, there's no need to eat there. So he told me, Paula, you got to go read some books and see what those lights are. A lot of people have had them on them.
Do you believe the story, Paul?
I definitely believe the story. They're people that, you know, they're sane people, you know. I mean, a lot of people know this person, you know. Okay, so he went on the spaceship, and they told him that he would be here for some time. And that we are here on this earth to learn discipline. And they showed them different planets, explained to them where they came, and they explained to them that we're the only solar system in the whole universe that doesn't travel in space. And he said that the reason why they don't appear to people is not because of mass hysteria, it's because it's against their constitution. They believe that the whole earth must be united and want them willingly to come. And they willingly would like to come here to help dispose of the nuclear. That's what they said, you know. Okay, so that one, I was scared. That light had scared me for about a year, you know. And then after that, I went to Washington State, where I met an Indian friend of mine from South Dakota. And he said, yeah, I see him out there in Indian land, you know, Black Hills over there where he lives. And he told me, I see him out there, but they come out and they land their ships. But you can't get anywhere near them because of those lights. But he said, the same thing happened to me. I was in this room and this light came in the whole bit. Okay, so this went on. Then I met another lady who was an Indian lady, and the spaceship had landed there. And I don't really know who to tell the story to, you know. So this little girl came to my door. I didn't even know who she was. And she said, can I spend the night at your house? Because I'm scared, me and my sisters and spaceships and all this. So I said, all right, come in. She was acting strange. You know, those lights put you on a strange, you know, kind of, you know, speed deal, you know. So she came in, and she was asked me to eat all kinds of things. I fed that girl about 10 times straight, you know, and I said, well, okay. So I walked her home the next day. I said, I'm going to talk to your mom. So I walked her home. I talked to her and she said, ask my family. It's true. So I walked her over this bridge, over this river. Oh, this river is kind of a long walk. I walked her over the river and got to her house, and I said, her whole family was there, a very nice family. The whole bunch was there. Her grandma had long braids. She was a real old lady.
Paula, kind of speed the story up, would you?
Okay, I'm trying to speed it up. Okay, well, anyways, I can give you an address of a lady who's trying to get the rest of her husband's story published. And she's a very nice lady, and anyone who's really interested in this can go to her house, Elta Standing Horse, 27401 Highway 74 Pierce. And if you call her...
Why don't you send me that information in a letter? We'll try to follow up.
Well, you can go to her house. She's trying to get someone to help publish the rest of her husband's book. Her husband had a Christian Bible school. He's Indian. And he's been to Venus, Mars, all over the place. And they're very nice outer space people. He's been in their ship. He's been all over. And I asked her, well, why didn't you go on the spaceship? She said to me, because they said that he was a good Christian man. That's why they brought him up.
Larry, would you like to meet this guy?
They live in a different sphere than us.
Mm-hmm.
They did not transgress like we did. They believe in the Bible. They have Ten Commandments, the whole bit. But they said they did not transgress like we did.
Okay.
And that we're on a different sphere than they are.
Okay.
That's what they explain, you know. But I wish the people would get together and listen to them, you know, because they know they can help us in a lot of ways. They're not here after our water. They don't need our water. They have all kinds of stuff up there.
Okay,
but if
Paula,
you go to this woman's home...
Paula.
Yeah?
Come on.
What
I want you to do is send me. I want that.
I met a little girl. This is my brother.
Paula.
Yeah.
I've got a bunch of other callers. I want you to send me the name and address of your friend.
Yeah. We'll try to go there and listen to the whole tapes.
We'll try to buy.
She's even seen them.
They
come to her door, knocked at night. And she was the only thing unusual about these men.
Okay, Paula. I'm going
to have hooked to their boots.
I'm going to have to let you go now, Paula. But we appreciate you sharing.
Well, I'm just going to say that I got friends that communicate with them.
That's true.
And it's really interesting stories. I can tell you a lot more, but I don't know, you know.
Yeah, we're running short of time.
Yeah, and I know another little girl it happened to her, too.
Okay, Paul, I'm going to have to let you go. This will go on forever.
Okay.
All right, thank you, honey.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. We're 19 minutes past 11 o'clock. I don't know how to respond to all of that. Do you, Larry?
No, other than I can parallel with sightings on Indian reservations in the Yakima Indian Reservation in Washington. They see lights up there quite frequently. You know, they have what they call fire towers, which are manned by the Indians themselves. And we've got hundreds and hundreds of reports of Indians seeing lights coming in and out of the wooded area, landing and then taking off again.
Well, yeah, they do happen up there.
Yes.
I hope Paula will send me the name and address of the lady, and we'll follow through upon that. Bob Monroe, who's best known for his book Journeys Out of the Bible, published nationwide, will be live here in studio. Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences, Journeys Out of the Body, and he's promised to get me out of the body when it gets to town. The week following that will be an extremely exciting week for us because Tom Bearden will be here live and in person, along with John Bedini and Steve Wirth, and we will talk about that amazing and exotic new world of free energy that those gentlemen have concocted, which will indeed change the world. And let's go on to our callers. We have Gary here. Gary, you want to know about the men in black? There are some horror stories about that, you know.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'll make it a real quick question if I can.
Paula took up a lot of time.
There have been some very, very good witnesses that have come forward and made quite a few statements about what they have seen. And then sequentially in time, these people all of a sudden just kind of shut up. And then other investigators got into what they were saying, and they found out that people had approached them and told them either in a very quiet, nice way or a very threatening way that they're going to either shut their mouth or, you know, whatever. And has there been any recent dealings with this type of thing, or what do you speculate is going on? Is it either with the United States, or could it possibly be an extraterrestrial?
Talking about the MIBs.
The Men in Blacks, yes.
Yeah. Well, it's always been thought that the MIBs had a connection with the intelligence agencies, that they were the intelligence agencies trying to silence the good UFO witnesses, if you will. I have never personally ran into the MIBs myself, but I have run into the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and my researchers have when we attempted to get some documentation out of the government where my people had been visited by the FBI and threatened with treason, the Treason Act, everything else you can think of to silence my investigators into trying to get documentation out of the government.
They would, the FBI would threaten treason charges if they were obeying the law, trying to get information through the Freedom of Information?
Well, we had turned up a specific case that occurred off the coast of Cuba in 1969. Information came to us from an NSA listening post off the coast of Florida. And when we tried to obtain the information on the case, we started to penetrate the case, if you will, and we're getting information when all of a sudden we were visited by the FBI and threatened with the violation of the Treason Act, if you will, and to try to stop my investigator from probing into that case.
Is there any possible litigation that could be taken on the United States government to stop these types of acts?
Well, that's one of the things we're attempting to do, is to stop the ridicule, harassment, and get the facts out to the public. I mean, let them know that UFOs are real. The evidence is there within their own files. We've uncovered it. It's there, and they're withholding that the phenomena from you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right, Gary, thank you for your question there. And Paul is on the line. Paul?
Yes, good evening, Larry, and good evening, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
First, I want to correct you on his statement.
Could you speak up a little bit there?
Yeah. First, I wish to correct him on his statement about the Cuban incident. That was 1967.
Yeah, 1969.
Sorry. Next, I would like to ask him concerning the epilogue portion of the book, concerning the Paul Benowitz case. I checked out the name of his company and found it to be Thunder scientific laboratories.
That's correct.
But he was not listed as a doctor. Others in the book that I looked this up in showed other people, companies, how many professionals they had and so forth. Secondly, I'd like to get into that case. What has he found out currently concerning Benowitz? In line with that same thing is the case in his book he mentions about Miller. Now, I know I'm a GS-15 with certain types of clearances and certain sensitive agencies. It's necessary that you get congressional approval to get a GS-15. So as Mr. Miller, I won't refer to his first name because I don't remember right offhand, but in the book he mentions about Miller being impartial toward investigations, having been with Blue Book previously and was one of the best investigators, impartially that is, in the subject matter. Benowitz case, I wanted to also talk about the CR-44 material. Now, you people use acronyms in that book, but you don't define what they mean. Is CR-44, is that carbon radioactive? Is that chromium? What are we talking about?
Okay, I can hardly hear him, but I think he's asking what HQCR-44
is. I'd like to know what your current status is on the Benowitz case.
Okay, the Benowitz case is still going forward. Dr. Bruce McAbee is doing some heavy work into that case. He's been out to Kirkland Air Force Base several visits and has had long, lengthy conversations with Benowitz and the people involved in that case. We have turned another document on that case, which comes from OSI, Air Force OSI on the case. We were unaware that Dr. Paul Benowitz had turned over films to OSI, if you will. When we talked to him and asked him about that, he said, no, I never gave the photographs that I had of that I took of the objects coming in and out of the Kirkland. All I did was go down to the base for a bunch of officers, some high-ranking officers, if you read the book, and showed my films. I never turned them over. We now have a document that shows that the Air Force, some way, had obtained Dr. Benowitz's films and done an analysis on them and have depicted the objects in there as being genuine, unidentified flying objects.
He also wanted to know what the acronym meant there.
HQCR-44. Yes, when we filed Freedom of Information Act requests on that, they told us that it dealt with nuclear material.
Nuclear material for you, Paul.
Okay, now what's this doctored in the film? What sort of recording devices did he use? I mean, how valid is the recorded information that he has obtained?
I can't hear him, but
he wanted to know what kind of recording devices were used and how valid was that information.
Okay, that he's had, what do they call them? I can't think of it off the top of my head now. Motion detectors, infrared detectors. He had something to do with propulsion. I can't remember them all now. If Benowitz is very easy to reach by writing Thunder Laboratories in New Mexico there, and if you write him and ask him, he'll send you exactly what he used in his investigation on that case.
What's this doctored in? No.
Okay. No, I don't know.
You don't know. Okay, thank you very much.
Why don't you give Benowitz, drop him a line there, the laboratories, and he's pretty open about it.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. Mary, you've been waiting a long time. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, is that Marv? Excuse me. I'm not wearing my glasses. It looks like a Mary from here, but it is Marv. Marv, welcome aboard. Hello, Marv. Hello.
Maybe. Harry, can you hear me okay?
There, I had you punched out, so I've got
okay.
You punched back in. My fingers are not what we would call expert here. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a comment and then a question. I wrote a term paper back in college days in reference. This has been about 15, 20 years ago. And I was astonished as to how much information there is at the various libraries. And, they actually covered the Betty and Barney Hill case, et cetera, even somewhere in Ohio where a UFO supported it landed in the backyard, and the occupant handed the owner of the home, I guess small town, buckwheat pancakes, and I guess in return for using the water hose. So I corroborate what you said about needing water. And the other comment, the question is, They covered a lot of information about Donald Fry, who had a top secret clearance with the Air Force at that time. Do you know his whereabouts now?
Donald Fry? No, I don't.
Yes, I do. Don's in, I believe it's Albuquerque. He was a guest on the show about 9 months ago. He's doing fine.
I had two of the highest security clearances quite a few years ago when I was in the service. And it was rather unusual for him to report incidents like that. And they wouldn't pull their security clearance from him. Whereas I know that, you know, people working around me were involved with minor incidents, and they pulled theirs, you know. So they're sort of convinced me that, you know, there must be something, you know.
Well, Donald Fry certainly thinks there is. He's had a number of experiences, and
They covered the remote saucer where he rode back to New York and back within seconds, I guess.
It didn't take him long.
Yeah.
Okay, Mark.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for your call.
Interesting about the water thing that we came up with the communication between our government and an extraterrestrial civilization and the exchanging of technology for water. And we later found out that in the gentleman brought up the Benowitz case, when we turned a document, there was a mention to something called Project Aquarius in it. Now, when we began filing Freedom of Information Act requests on that coded Project Aquarius, we not only filed Freedom of Information Act requests, we filed Privacy Act requests, which gave us access to all interdepartment memos that were being passed on our request. And we were getting back documents which were saying we believe that Cause was in possession of top secret material. Aquarius, as you know, in the zodiac sign, is the sign for water.
Mm-hmm.
We found some interesting things through the news media, is that when Albert Einstein, years ago, when he was living, was at a press conference at one time, and somebody brought up the subject of UFOs and asked him, why would extraterrestrials be coming here? What would they be coming here for? And Einstein's response was they would be coming for water. And when they questioned him and said, why water? He says, because this is the only planet within this galaxy that has water.
Well, that's saying a lot. In this galaxy, we know that it's certainly the most water-laden planet in the solar system.
Mm-hmm.
Although there are geysers of water on Mars, we have photographs of those.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting, too, I recall on that very first show I did, one of the guests was Bill Herman. You know Bill?
No, I don't.
Of him in South Carolina, who claims to be a contactee with a group of the little people who claim to be, or has told them they're from Zeta 1, Zeta 2 Reticuli. And one of the reasons that they came to this planet in the first place was to study our water, which seemed to be heavier than theirs, even though it was H2O.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So water keeps cropping up.
Yeah, water does keep cropping up.
Ron, you're on.
Yes, I'm very grateful for gentlemen like you.
Thank you.
Larry, I'd like to direct a question to you. I have heard from other sources as well that we do have alien beings who have died, either frozen or preserved somehow. And I would presume that they've obviously have done autopsies or biological analysis on the blood type, the organs and the heart functions or vascular systems and things like that. Have they done such things? And if they have, what were the results?
Okay. I don't specialize in that area. A gentleman by the name of Len Stringfield does.
Yes, Len has been on the show a couple of times, and he has three papers that are published, and I think the autopsy reports are in paper number two.
That's correct, yes. We do know that they have no reproduction systems as we know them, which would kind of tend to what I was saying before, that they look like clones almost, you know, brother and sister and so forth. With no external genitalia, if you will.
Well, it was mentioned earlier that there had been two sightings of female types, and I was also it struck my interest in how were they identified as being female, but are these again of a different species or type?
Well, the case in Brazil, the female was very humanoid like you and I.
I see.
And indeed forced a sexual act upon the young man. So she obviously had genitalia.
Yeah, they were more humanoid-type creatures that were involved in that case. The incidences that Len Stringfield talks about deal with the small individual with the very large heads and so forth. He has got testimony from the person who performed the autopsy while in the service on one of the beings.
Plus photographs.
Yes, plus the photographs.
And again, I guess these are not available to the public, or at least readily available.
Well, you'd have to contact Len Stringfield. Like I said, they're in his possession and not mine, and he would be the ones to try to get them off of.
Okay, I have one other question here I'd like to ask you. Have you ever heard of a man called Townsend Brown? He worked with what he called a device called a gravitator. Now, I'm slightly changing the subject here in the fact that our government is trying so hard to find other ways of defying gravity, such as through rocketry and so on. Townsend Brown had developed he had noticed an effect through a Coolidge tube, which was an X-ray tube, a very primitive type, around 1922. And he had found when laying on a scale, when it was activated with voltage, it would change its weight. And he pursued it further and had developed a flying disc with a dielectric field, or the dielectric material of some sort. And he had continued on pretty much on his own and up to about 1953. And our government apparently had no interest. He went to France and the Aeronautical Society in France. And they initially showed interest and then for some strange reason decided it was not worth pursuing. And as a result, he exhausted his own personal funds and could no longer get government funds. Have you heard of the man?
The name is familiar, and I'm partially familiar with some of the work.
He's from Ohio originally. I think he's now in Northern California somewhere, if he's still alive. He was born, I think, around 1905. And I just wonder if he didn't, you know, wasn't kind of on the verge of discovering what we're trying to discover now.
Could possibly be.
Possibly. That is very close. We made some great scientific advances in this field around the turn of the century, which were immediately squashed by Wall Street. And we're now turning all of the work of J.P. Morgan around.
Yeah, well, now, he peaked out in his I mean, he was actually just exhausted, you know, financially and mentally around 1953. And I think that's the Roswell incident. Wasn't that around in that period of time also?
The Roswell incident?
Oh, 47. Okay, all right, yeah.
It's interesting that we've been experimenting with different means of...
You're fading out. I can barely hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's interesting that our government, not only our government, but other governments are experimenting with other sources of energy for means of propulsion. We had turned a document from Canada which involved the Canadian project called Project Magnet, which was the Department of Transportation in Canada was experimenting with the magnetic fields of the Earth to try to find a means of propulsion out of it. And we turned a document which was sent by senior radio engineer Wilbur Smith to the Canadian government. The project that he was working on was on the collapse of the Earth's magnetic field as a source of energy. And it was believed that UFOs, according to the document, this is what Smith's document states, that he believed that UFOs were operating on magnetic principles. Smith sent a memo on November 21st, 1950, and it was forwarded to the controller of the telecommunications, and the matter of flying saucers came up, and he says, and I'll quote from the document, "I made a discreet inquiry to the Canadian embassy staff in Washington, who were able to obtain for me the following information. A, the matter is the most highly classified subject in the United States government, rating higher even than the H-bomb. B, two flying saucers exist. C, their modus operandi is unknown, but a concentrated effort is being made by a small group of scientists headed by Dr. Vannevar Bush. The entire matter is considered by the United States authorities to be that of tremendous significance. Smith's memo itself was classified top secret." So you see, the Canadian government was working on the magnetic principles at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help you, Ron?
Well, yeah, there's some help. I just might give a footnote here that Townsend Brown, his biggest problem was that he required very high voltages and wattages, like 100 kilowatts with his first working model, and later he had a 17-foot, I'm sorry, about a 2-foot disc that was flying in a circle 17 feet per second. However, it had to be tethered by a 20-foot power line, you might say, or power cord, because of the tremendous power source that was required, and he just couldn't seem to overcome the a more compact or lighter type of energy source. But he apparently, and I very much would like to follow up on this, if there's patents or something that's substantial, but it seemed like he just couldn't overcome that energy package that he required.
Well, that's being overcome, the energy package. We'll
yeah.
get into that in 2 weeks. I want you to be listening when John Bedini is here.
Oh, I will. I'll be looking forward to that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Ron.
Good night.
And we have Dick on the line.
Oh, boy. I've been waiting. Let me say something here.
Okay.
If they took a poll and they want to know what show I thought in all of this county L.A. area, on all talk radio, all these stations, you know what I'd say? Bill Jenkins and the Open Mind Show.
Oh, well, thank
now,
you very much.
Now, I want to get other people's chance to say, so I'm going to get all this 30 years and condense it into a couple of questions here for Larry. And one of them is very important to my life because I was in San Marcos, Texas back in 1952.
Well, I was in Lampasas, Texas. That wasn't too far away.
I'm not sure that you're not a Bill Jenkins that was in that I know from the service, but we'll get into that another time.
No, I missed the service. I missed the service.
Oh, okay, well, anyway.
That's as close as I got.
Get to my question here on the highway. I forget which one it was between San Marcos to Lockhart to Seguin. I think Larry will know this area I'm talking about. Over the years, since what happened to me that night, and this was the first 2 weeks of October, 1952. Matter of fact, specifically, if you can pinpoint it for me, the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th. And what happened in my life was the worst thing that could have happened in my life at that time. And then has led me into the same sphere of thinking and everything. In other words, I don't believe in death. I believe in the life here. I believe in a lot of things. I now come to believe and think that the blinding light that blinded me and caused me to go over a cliff and lose my first wife in an accident, and the fact that the person that was from the local newspaper was only 5 minutes behind me coming up the road and then saw nobody, saw nothing, there's only one thing I can think of that it could possibly be, that there was nobody that was there other than something that swooped down and came at me. And then the rest of the story also explains itself. And that's what I'm trying to find out. If you may have any information or knowledge of sightings in the Seguin, Lockhart, or San Marcos, and then along that strip there.
In 1952.
Back in 1952. Then I have a little comment on the beings that I've had an experience in 1974, right in Hollywood. But I'll hear the answer to that. Or wait a minute, I'll get off the station and let you give the answer to that. You got it written down somewhere,
okay.
I think, on that one. Walter Andrews, let me get it once again.
Andrews.
Oh, A-N-D-R-E-W-S?
That's right.
Okay, thank you very much, Larry.
Okay.
Now, the other thing here is that this happened to me right around, you may have heard of this, that they said 20 people were herded off towards Colorado or something like that and disappeared and never were heard of since.
Talking about Bowen Peak.
Gosh, I don't.
There was a couple that were telling people that they were going out into the desert and were going to be picked up by UFOs.
Gosh, I don't know what the whole story was, but the time frame was when I got visited in Hollywood by these two beings, and they did not. They did first. The male got in touch with me. Then he arranged with an appointment for the three of us. It was like a triangle. These people did not. When the male species first approached me, he talked in English, and then set up this appointment for the lady to come there, and we got in, and then there was no more, we had three meetings. In 3 days, we had two meetings with the woman and him, and anyway, they did not speak. In other words, we just sat there and looked, and they were able to go through everything that I had in my mind, And then I was, for some reason, I was able to do the same thing with them, get what I wanted out of them. And we looked at each other, and that's all.
What did you find out from them?
The way they communicate, why they were here, and also their bodies, if they do not get returned to their mothership, is the way they said, within a 72-hour period, their bodies start. You remember the movie about the 50-foot woman,
yeah.
Something like that? Their bodies grow, and it's got something to do with the water. It's got something to do.
There comes that water again.
Yeah, that's right. It's got something to do with. It's got to be mixed, though.
Well, they have why were they here?
Now we're getting into. I've regressed 42,000 years. And they come back in increments. They're like observing us, and they don't want to come and stay here until we straighten out our act, so to speak. They don't like the way we fight and kill and greed and
I can understand.
All this type of thing. Yet there is these things that we do have that they're studying. And the rest of all of these little pieces of the puzzle, there are a lot of them that are true. They have already interbred and so forth and so on. And I'm going to write everything that I've been studying and down and send it to your magazine and so that bring it to your attention, Bill, because I don't want to take up all the time here.
Well, I certainly appreciate hearing.
I'm talking about 30 years of stuff that I can't reiterate it the way I'd like to right now.
Give it to me.
I'm so excited and happy to even get through to your station.
Well, I'm glad you got through and shared that with us, Dick. And send me your material. I'd love to see it.
Okay. God bless you.
KABC time now is 10 minutes away from the midnight mark. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Larry Fawcett, the author of Clear Intent, published by Prentice Hall. And it's an absolute must book for you about what the government... Well, get the book. You'll understand that they've been trying to keep our heads in the sand all along about this thing called the UFO. See, and humor has channeled through Thomas Jacobson, and that's happened on this show quite often, and Dr. Peoples will be here on December 22nd, I believe it is, offers an unprecedented spiritual psychology and philosophy for you. He's inspired thousands of individuals like yourself to re-examine and work with their own spiritual nature and personal growth and development and self-image. Now, whether you're a believer or a student or just curious or even a skeptic, Dr. Peoples has something to offer everyone. Join Dr. Peoples as channeled by Thomas Jacobson on November 30th at 7:30 p.m. at the Santa Monica Bay Women's Club. That's at 1210 North 4th Street in Santa Monica. The doors open at 6. This presentation is brought to you by Heidi Dew Enterprises. For details on that, here's the number to call, 818-761-0945. Let me give it to you again. Area code 818-761-0945. Chance for you to see Dr. Peoples in person. And, of course, I invite you to join Dr. Peoples and Thomas and us on the 22nd. Back to Larry Fawcett, who is still hanging on the phone there on the East Coast, talking about one of his favorite subjects and mine, the UFO, the way the government is covering it up. And we have, is that Russell on the line?
Yes.
Hi, Russell. How are you?
All right. How are you doing?
Super.
Great. I've spoken with you before. Let me interject something here quickly. For the people who have problems getting the book, I was finally able to get it by special ordering it through B. Dalton.
Uh-huh.
And you can do that. I haven't found it on the shelf, but you can do it, and I found it, and I read it. Really enjoyable.
Thank you.
Thank you. But what I'm talking about, or actually calling about, is I've heard something about having occurred around 1943 in the state of Washington, wherein I believe it was a craft was seen to land, and several hundred people, I think, estimate about 400, then just dispersed in all different directions. Have you heard anything about this?
No, I haven't.
And I thought I heard somebody about a week or two ago mention it on the show, and it wasn't, you know, elaborated on, so I wasn't sure what it was they were speaking about.
That's a new one to me.
I haven't heard of that one either.
Maybe I misunderstood it, but it was so intriguing, that's why I decided to call up, because I hadn't heard anything else about it. Well, then I'll hit on a tangent here, which is all this talk about water. As advanced as these people may be, why would they not be able to manufacture the water themselves with the existing hydrogen?
There's something in the water here that they need. It's not the water themselves.
So it's not actually just the molecular structure of hydrogen and oxygen.
Right. There's something in the water that they need.
Has there been any elaboration upon what that specifically may be?
No, not a bit.
Not at all. Okay.
Listen, if we find out what it is that they need, we may check into it and see if we can use it.
Yeah, well, that's what it's here for, I suppose. To be
okay.
Thanks, Rob.
There's our orchestra. That means that we've got to go, and that's it for tonight. Larry, thank you so very, very much for staying up so late back there on the East Coast to be with us.
Bill.
And we just touched the surface. You want to come back?
Sure, sometime. I'd just like to close by saying after 30 years of deceit and deception, the government still manages to keep UFO-related material from the public.
We'll try to stop that. See you next time.